Sci FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
It is 7:22, about to go 7:23. I'm Howard Philbin. We were talking about sleep because today is apparently World Sleep Day. And I was saying that, I don't know, I think people who need a lot of sleep are weak. Weak people need sleep. It's as simple as that. Sleep is a sign of weakness. M says to function at our best, we need adequate sleep. No, we actually don't. It's nonsense. And Professor Adrian Puren, he's an expert on all things medical, and he definitely would agree. He's executive director of the National Institute for Communicable Diseases. Good morning, Professor. You agree with me, right? Sleep is for the weak. It's a sign of weakness, isn't it?
Good morning. I'm sleepwalking through this. So
All right. That's a real problem when you actually don't want to come onto a show and completely disagree the first thing with the guy asking you the question. But it actually is an interesting thing because we were talking about that. Yes. I grew up in a household where it was almost like, what are you doing sleeping? You know, are you lazy? Like there's so much to do. And it actually does impact on us because sleep is the more we see, the more vital we realize it's become.
Yes, no. I think it's probably changing attitudes and influence of religion or ethics or philosophy, I guess, that is, and the science, obviously, informing us that sleep is critical, it is important.
Yeah. Anyway, for those who need it, obviously. Right, let's...
Indeed.
Let's just talk about the state of disaster. I'm completely perplexed because... It's continued now for another month. What's your thought on it?
Again, you know, this is my pay grade. I'm sure that there's some thinking behind the changes that or the continued state of disaster. Again, I think we just keep to some of the key messages I think that the public must be aware of.
What are those key messages? Because I'll tell you, and I've said this to you before, my concern is in the absence of rational regulations, we make up our own regulations, and that's dangerous because each of us are deciding what is reasonable or not. So I might decide it's unreasonable to wear a mask outside but inside, and the next person might decide something different. What is reasonable today?
So I suppose the wearing of masks, as you know, is a criminal offence. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. It is. It is.
Risk or fine. Yeah,
I'm skirting on the wrong side of the law at the moment. Dangerous criminality.
Yes, but I think again, if you're thinking about wearing masks, where should they be worn? It's more like indoors, unventilated or poorly ventilated areas. I think that's critical. Keeping sizes small is again still, in my view, still very important, and that physical distancing again. Is all important. I guess outside, it's again, I think you just need to measure the risk for yourself and those around you. So if you are in a big crowd outside, there is risk, even though you're outside. So again, I think you just need to balance those things. And I suppose the other important thing from my perspective is people getting vaccinated, getting fully vaccinated and having their boosters. Like that's, I think, shown critical. In so many countries.
Absolutely.
Now. It's the critical component. Because again, you know, I think we're landing ourselves into false insecurity by saying, oh, you know, Omicron didn't result in the deaths and severity of disease that we saw with the previous waves. But we don't know. This could be really by chance that we've had a wave where the mutations in this particular virus has led to a virus that certainly was highly transmissible, but in terms of pathogenicity was not compared to the other variants, not to the same extent, but the next one we don't know. So again, I think we should just need to be cautious, and therefore, for me, the big thing is really about the vaccination in particular, especially in older age groups.
No question.
And I think that explains what we're seeing in China and Hong Kong. It's really that is the selection of the vaccine as well as not vaccinating in critical or vulnerable individuals.
Explain that. Explain that a little bit further.
Yeah, so I think in China, I can't remember the, I think it's the Sinovac, one of those particular viruses, vaccines that have been using. There, the efficacy is not as good as, I think it's below 50%. So again, if you're using a vaccine at that sort of level of efficacy, you can just imagine the level of protection may not be as good as, for example, a Pfizer or a Johnson & Johnson. So I know people have been critical of Johnson & Johnson, but I think it is still an effective vaccine. We should just... laugh it out of court.
Absolutely right. And that is fascinating then, because then China presenting a case of vaccinated versus non-vaccinated to the rest of the world.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, obviously they had a different strategy compared to the rest of the world. I mean, similar to New Zealand and other places like that, which was really just to try and control. But I think it's become very difficult, especially with viruses like, well, variants like Omicron, I think. It's become very difficult to do that.
Let's just talk about flu and COVID-19, because they're starting to almost become quite similar in people's reaction to them, assuming that they've been vaccinated. How do we treat this moving forward?
Yeah, so because the signs and symptoms are really very similar, there's no sort of pathognomonic sign or symptom that you can really choose, possibly the loss of taste or smell, but really they are very similar. So I think it depends on the nature of the symptoms and the severity. I think in both, regardless of whether or not you are tested. So I think it is very difficult to do that. So it comes back again, especially with flu, and again, especially if you're in the vulnerable age groups, if you're pregnant, have underlying conditions, then again, I really would encourage people, if we are starting to see signs of the flu season, because remember, we've not really had a full flu season, or a season which has been during May to August, for example. So it's really been very different. So I think we just need to be cautious. And again, I know that South Africa doesn't have an extensive flu program as it has done for COVID-19.
Right.
But again, I really would encourage people to, because again, we don't know what the risk, we do know what the risks are. So those individuals who are in the high risk category should really get vaccinated, because again, you can't always distinguish between flu and COVID-19. It's very difficult. However, as you know, COVID-19 is obviously more lethal, but flu is also lethal. We must not forget that.
Absolutely.
And that also leaves me, I think, you know, I suppose it comes back to the children as well. So children are really the main, if you like, transporters of the influenza virus. And so you do see when their school breaks that the numbers of cases decline quite rapidly. And quite interestingly, again, those non-pharmaceutical interventions are really the key around changing of the flu seasons on RSVs. It's because people have been washing their hands, I hope, they should continue to do so, and wearing their masks. So all those particular factors that we proposed for COVID really is the same for the influenza season coming up.
Professor Adrian Puren, thank you. As always, at 7:31, I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.